Mishmash is supported by the Keep Michigan Kids Tobacco-Free Alliance. 67% of Michigan voters support the historic bill package to reduce tobacco use among our kids. More information at flavorshookkidsmi.org.
This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Gorchow. Michigan public schools have gotten back their third grade reading scores, and the results are not great.
The reading scores are at a 10-year low. The Michigan Student Test of Educational Progress, or MSTEP, results were released this week. The results showed that only 39.6% of third graders across Michigan passed the state's English Language Arts Test. This is especially disheartening considering that there have been efforts to try to raise these pivotal test scores. We spoke with Peter Spatafor, who's with the Michigan Alliance for Student Opportunity, and this was his reaction to the results.
I think like every observer around Lansing and across the state, we were disappointed in the numbers, but also not entirely surprised to see the lingering impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. The state superintendent talks a lot about the impact of virtual instruction when we were not able to be in classrooms, having an impact on those early learners when we're trying to get at them soon and quickly to grasp those early reading skills. Virtual instruction is not like entirely to blame here. There are great ways to do virtual instruction, but as we looked at who's being tested in this window, it's not surprising to see that the students that sort of started out their careers during the pandemic are the ones we're seeing lower test scores.
The third graders who took those tests last year were mostly in preschool and just starting their school careers when their year was cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic. And then many of them had their kindergarten years upended, with many school districts still conducting remote learning for much of that school year.
The state has been pouring hundreds of millions into funding for districts to hire reading interventionalists for the kids struggling the most, but it's unclear to what extent school districts have successfully filled those positions and how many students they can actually help.
Michigan had a law that in the early 2020s forced some third graders to repeat the grade because they could not read at grade level. About 5% scored low enough to be eligible to be held back, but under the exemptions in the law, just half of 1% of all students actually were required to repeat third grade.
Democrats in 2023 repealed the language allowing third graders to be held back and instead allow more additional interventions for struggling readers. Republicans say that was a mistake.
At the state level, the question is, how will Governor Gretchen Whitmer and majority Democrats in the legislature handle this problem? They already have surged funding into it. It's not clear that more money, even if they can find it, will provide an answer.
Schools, while state-funded, are locally run. And between traditional public school districts plus charter schools, there are more than 800 individually run local school operations trying to figure out how to get students back on track, something that won't be easy given the pandemic interruptions still affecting students.
There's been such an emphasis in Michigan schools for the past decade on science, technology, and engineering and math, also known as STEM, one wonders if it isn't time for a pivot to rebalance the scales toward reading and writing. Michigan State University put out a report in July that found more than two-thirds of kindergarten through fifth grade teachers are using curriculum resources for reading and writing instruction that are unrated or rated subpar.
We're going to take a short break, but stick around because when we come back, we're talking with Peter Spatafor, Executive Director of the Michigan Alliance for Student Opportunity. Hey, it's Shayna Roth, host of WDET's Mishmash. Our thoroughly unjumbled state politics podcast is only possible thanks to our listeners' financial support. And right now, we really could use your support. If you go to wdet.org/give and make a gift today, we would greatly appreciate it. Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Gorchow. We're here now with Peter Spatafor, one of the Capitol's foremost education policy experts. He's worked for groups through the years representing principals, school board members, and superintendents. He's now executive director of the Michigan Alliance for Student Opportunity, a coalition of urban school districts. He's also a member of the Lansing City Council. Peter, welcome to Mishmash.
Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Shana. It's good to be here.
So, Peter, walk us through your reaction to the reading test scores that came out with the MSTEP test results recently, a 10-year low in those numbers.
I think like every observer around Lansing and across the state, we were disappointed in the numbers, but also not entirely surprised to see the lingering impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. The state superintendent talks a lot about the impact of virtual instruction when we were not able to be in classrooms, having an impact on those early learners when we're trying to get at them soon and quickly to grasp those early reading skills. Virtual instruction is not like entirely to blame here. There are great ways to do virtual instruction, but as we looked at who's being tested in this window, it's not surprising to see that the students that sort of started out their careers during the pandemic are the ones we're seeing lower test scores. I do think we need to realize these test scores are not the whole picture. We can't just look at, we have a vaccine, we know how protocols work, so we have to move on and say that everything will go back to pre-pandemic levels and expectations and those types of things. These students have lived through a trauma like no one else in history in our country, and we can't just move on the next day. So there is a lot more that goes into teaching and learning than just the reading test scores. It's very important, don't get me wrong, but I do think that our educators are working hard to make sure that all components of teaching and learning are being addressed, including that social and emotional learning piece that is important, not necessarily reflected in those reading scores.
But sticking with those test scores, I mean, they've been pretty troubling for a while now, but this is the lowest that they've been in 10 years. And students have been back to school for a couple years now. What was being done to try to improve these scores and what isn't working?
Sure. I think one of the things that has been sort of frustrating and confounding for educators is policy churn from the state capitol, constantly changing how we how laws interplay with curriculum and instruction. For instance, the third grade reading law that has a lot of positive components, including intervention plans and those types of things, but had the retention component that we just recently eliminated. And I'll say we believe, too, that perhaps our screening tools that we have been using to identify students that might have learning disabilities or reading disabilities, excuse me, and show characteristics of dyslexia, those screening tools might not be perfect. So you're hearing about some conversations in Lansing about bills that would address this. Some of those bills are a huge overcorrection with a lot of micromanagement steps. What we're advocating for is looking at those screening tools and making sure we have the best screening tools in place to identify students with reading disabilities and those that show characteristics of dyslexia, and then move them into those intervention plans that have been identified in the third grade reading law past, I'm going to forget the year now. Zach knows I've been around a long time, so all the years kind of blur together here, but we've done that. And I think we need to make sure also that goes with any of these changes in law, changes in tools, is investment in solid professional development and giving our educators the time they need to understand how the tools they're being asked to use work. And those types of things will help with reading scores and standardized test improvements.
Peter, I think you were referencing these screening bills that are pending in the House of Representatives right now. The Michigan Senate passed them to set a new standard on how to screen for dyslexia. Is that what you're referring to? And how important is it that the legislature move those bills this year?
Well, I think it's important that they move the bills when they're right. Right now, they're overly prescriptive and change a whole lot of state law, when really what we're seeing is if we would have a better screening tool to identify students with reading disabilities and characteristics of dyslexia, I think that's when we could be supportive of legislation. Right now, it's overly prescriptive and kind of discounts all of the good and positive aspects that are in Michigan's third grade reading law. Those two, the screening tool and the intervention plans, can play nicely together. The intervention plans identify what students will need once they are identified as needing those interventions. What we're seeing from folks in the field and experts that are far more schooled in this topic than I am is that that screening tool is inadequate. So it's not that the whole law is broken. It's that we're not identifying enough students early enough to give them the interventions they need. So I would not say it's imperative that bill moves quickly. I'd say it's imperative we get that bill right and then move that bill and get a new screening tool in place.
Peter, so you were talking about the pandemic's continuing influence on education and how kids are doing in school. The students who were in school in March of 2020, when the governor ended the school year at the start of the pandemic, I think would be in now like fifth grade at this point. How likely are we to see test scores continue to struggle to recover for years to come?
You know, Zach, that might be outside of my area of expertise, but I do think it's going to take a while to regain that that time period in terms of seeing results turn around. I don't want to say this is encouraging, but what you're seeing is results are down across the board, right? It's not like a certain subset is seeing worse than the rest in comparison, if that's making sense. So it is definitely seeing, it's a shared experience across the state. So I think that's going to take some time. I don't know how long of that's going to take. Not a great podcast answer, but I do think that's outside of my my area of expertise to say how long that's going to take.
Sure. The state has pumped a lot of money into K through 12 schools in recent years. What's the case that this is having the desired effect?
Well, so the state has pumped a lot of federal money in to the schools. And I think when you look at our budgets, they've remained still underfunded from a sort of nonpartisan, unbiased observation through the School Finance Research Collaborative, which identified billions and billions of dollars in underfunding for meeting the standards that we've set for our students. The federal money was extremely helpful with sort of one-time programs and purchases. A lot of money went into HVAC improvements, which is now one of the top recommendations from the CDC to help avoid spreading diseases like COVID-19 is to invest in HVAC. And we've done a lot of that across the state with that federal money. We know every researcher in the country, even those that were skeptical of money matters, have changed their tune to money does matter. And it's not a matter of just pumping money into the system, but it's a matter of putting the right dollars into the system and then having qualified educators in front of students and all sorts of things that make sure we have the right curriculum, that the temperature is comfortable, that they're eating, that they're being fed while they're there, that they can concentrate on teaching and learning. So I think the case, if I'm circling back to your question, which I'm trying to answer and maybe dance around a little bit, but is what's the case that this has made a difference? It is making a difference, but we are still underfunded. And, you know, I think that's one of the criticisms of the school lobby is that it's never enough. Well, we've actually not seen enough come to the schools based on what they need to do their jobs effectively. Schools are a pretty amazing entities, and the people that work in them are pretty amazing individuals. They do what they do with what they're given. You know, they make it work, but they've been asked to make it work for quite some time while being underfunded. So we will continue to advocate for new revenues to bolster school funding. And every year is more money than the last year, because that's how, generally speaking, since we've pulled out of the recession, our budgets have worked and tax collections have worked. But we're still $13 billion under the Headley revenue cap. And I think only on Mishmash can I talk about the Headley cap, and the listeners will understand what I'm talking about. But that's a staggering number. That's almost doubling the school aid fund. I'm not suggesting that's what we should do, although I'm sure schools wouldn't mind an extra $13 billion, but there's room there, is the point, to raise more revenues and invest in ensuring that we provide the resources needed to educate the child, not run a system. So we've got a system of schools, right, that the funding formula implies every student costs the same amount of money to educate, with exceptions. Now, we've got some categoricals that are starting to make differences in that, weighted foundations and things like that, but they're still not at their target weights. So once we start fully funding those, then I can start having a serious conversation about we've been providing adequate resources. Right now, we've been providing more resources than the year before, but it still continues to fall short of what is needed to meet the standards we have in law.
So while I think the average Mishmash listener probably has a better knowledge of Headley than your average person, I'll just, for those out there who may not know, what Peter's referring to was the Headley Amendment to the Michigan Constitution in 1978, which did a lot of things, but for the purposes of this conversation, set caps on how much revenue governments can raise. And right now, the state of Michigan is way under that cap. So a number of folks in that provide various services like, you know, education and local government services have said, hey, look, this has been too restrictive and we actually have a lot more room to grow. So that's what that's all about. There will not be a quiz at the end.
I think there's a saying, Zach, that if you think you know Headley, you don't know Headley.
Yes.
I think that's kind of the
hard and that's 100% accurate. are you delved a little bit into the policy side of this equation as opposed to the budget side. And I was curious to ask you, are you surprised that the governor and this first Democratic government, big D Democratic, in 40 years has not gone more deeply into the policy side of education? You know, they have stepped up funding, but as far as changing systems, the governor and legislative Democrats have not really touched school systems, curriculum, or really much of anything in the school code other than repealing the potential for third graders not reading at grade level to be held back. I know that was a mouthful, but again, are you surprised?
No, I'm following your question. I'm surprised and not surprised, right? Like, you know, we got a lot of educators in the legislature right now, and that's been working, I think, in our favor to help folks understand good policy in the classroom, right? They're recently removed from being in front of students and working in the legislature. We saw a lot of sort of labor policy changes at the front end that impacted the classroom related to tenure and evaluations and things like that. I do think to some extent, I'll grant some credit, I think folks in Lansing now are recognizing that maybe policy churn isn't so good. And we've come back, I think, working with unions and other management groups to make recommendations on what should change, things like repealing the third grade reading law. So in some cases, I think our motto has been provide us the adequate resources, set some guardrails, and let us do our jobs. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. Are there some laws we'd probably like to change? Yes, we'd like to repeal some things like Labor Day start. I think we'd like a little bit more flexibility around the merit curriculum and things like that. But some of those are big lifts and some of those are not. And some of those are issues we've learned to work with. We understand the law. We understand how to work with it. So changing it again creates a whole new churn. So to some respects, it's almost a relief that we're not seeing a lot of policy bills because it allows educators to focus on educating instead of learning what the state is now asking us to do while educating.
So what's on your wish list for action before the end of the legislative term?
Oh, you know, I think we're looking at, we want to see, it should surprise no one on this group that we want to see the rate cap reduction that the legislature passed and the governor signed into the budget passed into statutory law in some way, shape, or form.
So Peter, I'm going to stop you there. You're going to need to explain that for people. Oh, yeah. What are you talking about?
Don't they must read Gongwer, right? So they're steeped in what this is. So school districts several years back during some retirement reforms paid unlimited amount of money. It was not capped how much they were going to pay towards the retirement system to fund retirement and other post-employment benefits for their employees. That cap went into place around 20.96%, and it's been that way for about a decade. Recently, it was discovered that there was an overfunding of the OPEB, the other post-employment benefits, so healthcare, dental, and vision for school retirees, that freed up about $700 million, $680 million, I think was the total number. And that was could be used for other things. The school community coalesced around buying down that 20.96 rate cap by the full amount to provide relief to school districts who were paying that, you know, almost 21 cents on the dollar for payroll for the retirement system and lowering that, freeing up money to be used in other places. The legislature put that into the budget. The governor signed that. And so now that rate cap has been reduced in the budget. But in order to ensure its longevity, it needs to be done in statute. Alongside that, the legislature provided a reimbursement for what some employees are paying towards their retirement benefits. Currently, some employees pay 3% of their salary to the Office of Retirement Services. We collect that on their behalf. The legislature provided money to reimburse those employees that 3%. It's creating some confusion out in the field because folks think the 3% went away, when in reality what happened is they're getting reimbursed for it. So we are still, as a district, required to collect that 3%. And then we give them a check back on a schedule yet to be determined. ORS, just the Office of Retirement Services, just released a memo late last week or possibly early this week, clarifying that we still have to collect it and that we should expect our first reimbursement payments in November, but that that date is subject to change. And we don't know yet whether it will be in all of our state aid, whether we will pay reimburse employees on a monthly basis, give them one large check at the end of the year. So that's why it's important that statutory fix gets done. There's a few other, sort of things we'd like to see. Repealing the Labor Day start is one. I knew you were going to ask me this question and I don't have my list in front of me, but there's just, most of it is probably going to be around budgetary items. There is a quirk in the law. PA 152 established a cap for healthcare, how much an employer, a public employer, could pay. So it was either 20% of the premium or a certain dollar amount cap. There's a hard cap or a 20% cap, 80% cap, excuse me. That was expected to go up by CPI. And this year's CPI is going to be 0.2%. So that's going to result in some really large increases for employees. So I don't know that it's on my wish list, but it's certainly something that administrators are dealing with now and employees will deal with later. So potentially some healthcare tweaks are probably on the lame duck agenda. And then as far as the budget goes, we'd like to see a supplemental to sort of invest in some of those line items that we were not able to see dollars in the original budget that passed in June.
So a couple of follow-ups on that. When you say, talk about the Labor Day start, you know, Michigan's current law has been the case for a while where Friday before Labor Day is a mandatory no school day. And some districts start in mid to late August, then do the 4-day weekend, while other districts go old school, no pun intended, and they start the day after Labor Day, which is how we were for many years. Are you saying you want the schools, your members would like to go back to everybody just starts after Labor Day or something
else?
No,
so what actually is going on, Zach, is their schools are required to get a waiver from the Department of Education to start before Labor Day. Right now, many, many schools do. They have to go through this process. We're advocating for just eliminating that process. It was up for a vote and it got pulled early on. So that's just one of those that we've been trying for years. I think it's an easy policy win, but nothing, not going back to a post-Labor Day start.
So Peter, thank you so much for joining us today on Mishmash.
Been a pleasure.
Thanks again to our guest, Peter Spadafore, with the Michigan Alliance for Student Opportunity. Mishmash is produced by WDET Detroit's NPR station in collaboration with the illustrious Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin.
Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian.
Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. And our news director is Jerome Vaughn. Our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, basically wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash and send them a link. And you can learn more about Gongwer News Service, and we would love it if you would sign up for a trial subscription too at gongwer.com.
Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to wdet.org/give. We'll talk to you next week.